This podcast was recorded at the 2009 CUPE National Convention.
Now it is my privilege to introduce our national president, Paul Moist. You will agree with me that this leader embodies strength and calm. He has a solid sense of ethics. His union values go very, very deep. I believe that as a colleague, it's the respect that he gives each person and his desire to take the time to listen to others that I really appreciate the most. I have been working with Paul for the last nearly 2 years. I had the privilege and the honor, and especially to recognize all the union values that this man possesses. As new president of CUPE Quebec for the past year and a half, Paul helped me achieve an experience that was exceptional in terms of international solidarity. Paul, Claude, and Barry O'Neill, my brother on the National Executive Council Committee, we have constantly moved ahead. We have seen how poor this people can be in Havana. And all of the wealth that they can get through CUPE, all this solidarity is something that Paul Moist has a gift for, because that is what he is. So, please give a warm welcome to our great national president, Paul Moist.
Thank you, Lucy. Sisters and brothers, it's
confrères et consœurs, c'est un privilège pour moi de vous souhaiter la bienvenue à la belle ville de Montréal pour cette 24e congrès national de notre grand syndicat.
Brothers and sisters, welcome to Montreal. It's my great privilege to be here today on the podium. And what I see from here is magnificent. I see more than 2,500 faces, people who are here for the first time, people who have been here for many years, militants and leaders, the diversity of CUPE, our staff, delegates for whom it's the last convention, and some special guests who come from Canada and elsewhere in the world.
One of you, for your activism, for your dedication, you are CUPE. You are the face of CUPE. And today, as we begin our 24th Constitutional Convention, the first union in Canada to exceed 600,000 members from coast to coast to coast. And we're privileged on behalf of those members to gather this week to fight for fairness at work, for needed public services, for social justice here in Canada and around the globe. The convention video we just watched captures the breadth and the power of our union. And at this, our 2009 convention, it's our opportunity to close ranks, to discuss what we face, to develop plans to confront the global recession and what that means for us as workers here in Canada. A recession caused by global corporations and an endless demand for profits. By irresponsible banks, lending money they had no business lending and expecting us to pay off their bad debts. Speculators trumping sound economics, regulators who didn't regulate, pushing the world's economy into a recession. How did this happen? 25 years of deregulation, of privatization, and free trade. The rich got richer, and free market fundamentalism has caused our world's economy to spiral downwards. Not caused by workers, but workers throughout the world are paying the price. Here in Canada, last spring, fictitious auto workers earning $70 an hour. The collapse of the manufacturing industries here in Canada. The decimation of our forestry industry and entire communities in Canada. And this past spring and summer, open attacks on members of CUPE, municipal workers, in a couple of major cities. So we gather this week. We need unity. We need one voice to speak truth to power. To the banks, to the speculators, to the corporations, we say, you have ruined the world's economy, and you expect workers to bail you out? Hear us clearly. We are not going to march backwards. We don't accept your vision of the world. We will fight to defend public services, our right to free collective bargaining, and our right to fair wages and benefits for all workers. We're not going backwards in CUPE, we're going forwards. We don't accept that agenda. We don't accept it for workers throughout the world. Sisters and brothers, about 30 minutes ago, we welcomed special guests from countries throughout the world, whom you'll see in our forums this week and who will be attending our convention all week. And we could talk about what's happening to workers with the global recession in any number of countries. For this morning, I'll mention only one. Colombia, a country I was privileged to visit 15 months ago as part of a delegation of four public sector leaders from Canada to continue our projects and our work with the people of Colombia. 2,720 Colombian trade unionists killed, murdered since 1986. With impunity, 95% of the murders, nobody brought to justice, no investigations. No human rights, no labor rights in Colombia. We met in Colombia Afro-Colombians and indigenous Colombians forced off the land they've lived on for 300 years. By whom? By multinational corporations, including Canadian mining companies. And our federal government, in our name, has the audacity to enter into a so-called free trade agreement between Canada and Colombia. I say to Prime Minister Harper on day one of our national convention, on behalf of 600,000 CUPE members, you can't have trading rights with countries where there's no labor rights and no human rights. Tear up the trade agreement with Colombia. Don't sign that trade agreement with Colombia. We demand labor rights, human rights for the people of Colombia. Because, sisters and brothers, we know We don't enjoy free trade union rights in Canada if there are workers anywhere in the world that don't have those labor and human rights. So we're going to chart a direction this week for the next 2 years of our union. And we're going to focus on a number of things this week. I'm going to focus on three this morning: collective bargaining, pensions, and our anti-privatization work. On the collective bargaining front, we have relationships with 3,350 employers from coast to coast to coast for collective agreements for the members we're privileged to represent. We've had a taste of what we might expect in Canada's version of the recession in just the last number of months. About an hour from where I work in Ottawa is a place called Lanark County, where 100 of our members, 98% sisters, members of Local 1521, provide needed services to some of the most vulnerable citizens living in the community needing 24/7 care in a group home associated for community living type of atmosphere. And workers with 20, 25, 26 years of service, no pension plan, an employer that doesn't even access Government of Ontario money. So they struck for their own dignity and for a pension plan. And they walked the picket line with a very, very vicious employer. Well, after a number of weeks on the picket line, we achieved some more fairness. We didn't get everything those sisters and the brothers deserved. But the executive director of that Association for Community Living is out of a job. He's been fired by the board of directors, and our members struck a blow for decent, fair wages for all social service workers. In the great cities of Windsor and Toronto this past spring and summer, in Windsor, we saw a mayor, on behalf of a majority of city council, openly attack two civic locals, trying to roll the clock back to 1950, 101 days on the picket line, battling a right-wing mayor and council and a very right-wing media in Windsor. In Toronto, 39 days on strike, two of our largest locals in Canada, 101 pages of concessions on seniority rights, on benefits, and other rights in those collective agreements. It took 39 days in Toronto, 100 days in Windsor, 101 days, $12 million from our defense fund, our strike fund, but those workers in both communities didn't just stand up for themselves, they stood up for all of us, and they did a hell of a job. They did QP proud. In Saskatchewan, not 2 weeks after our last convention, government changed in Saskatchewan. 2 weeks into their governance, the government of Brad Wall in Saskatchewan introduced legislation severely compromising the right to strike for public employees, including healthcare workers. 18 months without a collective agreement, half of our members in the province of Saskatchewan. They are in a difficult round of bargaining. In the province of New Brunswick, retroactive legislation to impose zeros on doctors and government intrusion into a tentative agreement we had for nursing home workers in New Brunswick. In smaller communities in the last 2 years, Grand Forks, British Columbia, a small northern community, five library workers locked out by their employer seeking to roll back the clock on wages and on benefits. I phoned the president of the Grand Forks library workers on day one of their strike. He said that he felt a little bit alone and a little bit worried. By the end of that strike, which we won, he said he felt the warmth of over 500,000 CUPE members from coast to coast to coast. British Columbia paramedics on strike since April 1st of this year, but not allowed to strike. 97% designated essential services. An employer that won't come to the bargaining table and bargain. An emergency response system that is dependent on overtime, grossly understaffed, a system that's in great, great disrepair, and no third-party option. No option for a third party to settle the collective agreement. And I say to the government of British Columbia and the BC Paramedic Services, you can't take away BC Paramedics' rights to free collective bargaining. You're in for the fight of your life with BC Paramedics. Twenty-four months ago at our convention, you met the leadership, three locals, 252 members, locked out by Pierre-Carl Paladeau at the Journal de Quebec in Quebec City. We took two rank-and-file members and toured them across Canada to every one of your division conventions. You opened up your hearts and your wallets to these members. 15 months locked out. And a phone call that I got from Brother Claude on July 1st, 2008. For 15 months, that employer never budged from a list of 10 demands. Contract out this department. More hours worked for the same pay. Take this benefit away. Well, on July the 1st, 2008, after 12 million issues of our own union newspaper had been distributed in Quebec City, Quebec Corps Media, Mr. Paladeau, withdrew every single concession. We got wage increases because those members had your support from coast to coast to coast. So there are disputes too many to mention, but I thank you on behalf of the groups I've mentioned and those I haven't for your generosity. You know, governments are going to say that we're the problem, that the wages of public employees are the problem. They say that auto workers' wages caused the collapse of the big three automakers, that city workers in Toronto can't and shouldn't make $25 an hour. Well, they're wrong. They want us to march backwards. They want us to give up what those that built our union built. And we need to say to them, we won't do it. We will fight to expand our rights at the workplace. We're going to fight to resist any and all concessions. And we're going to give one message to all 3,350 employers that we deal with, and say to them, we'd love to have great labor relations. We value that. But if you take on one of us, you take on all 600,000 of us from coast to coast to coast. So I ask those members present, those locals that have been on the picket line since the last convention, stand up. Let us look at you. Let us thank you for standing on the front line. All locals that have been on strike, paramedics, stand up. City of Toronto, stand up. City of Windsor, stand up. You're our heroes. Thank you for standing up for free collective bargaining. Régime de retraite.
The pension plan, brothers and sisters, throughout our 46 years of existence, we have fought in order to obtain good pension plans with defined benefits. We have accomplished progress, but still 30% of our members do not have any pension coverage. So we still have a lot of work to do. And all this work is linked to dignity. According to us, all workers that have worked 30 to 35 years should be allowed to retire and to do so with dignity. So we need to rely upon an acceptable pension plan. This is what we want.
For all CUPE members by 2013. And for the 60-plus percent of Canadian workers without a workplace pension plan, we want a doubling of the Canada and Quebec pension plan benefits. We want a pension guarantee fund funded by speculators and employers to ensure that no worker has to worry about not collecting on their pension because of the reckless behavior of their companies. And we want an immediate increase for the most vulnerable in society, seniors in Canada, collecting the old age security and the guaranteed income supplement. Throughout our history, pensions have been bargaining issues and will remain so. Pensions are a political action issue and need to remain so. And pensions are a labor solidarity issue. 2 weeks ago, I was privileged to be in a hockey arena in the great city of Sudbury. Employees of Vale Inco in Newfoundland and Labrador and two locations in Ontario have been on strike for almost 3 months. Vale, the parent company, have owned Inco for 30 months, a Brazilian-based company. Vale Inco has taken out in 30 months from Inco's operations $4.2 billion in profits. They come to the bargaining table with steelworkers not wanting to share those profits, wanting to get away from a nickel bonus system that the company asked workers to agree to years ago, wanting to take seniority rights out of the collective agreement, and wanting to compromise a strike issue from a 9-month strike in 1979. In 1979, Inco workers achieved a defined benefit pension plan. Vale Inco, flush with money, says that all new employees will not be part of the defined benefit pension plan. And I stood proudly on your behalf on the ice with leaders from around the world, global mining unions, the Canadian Labor Congress, and I presented them with a down payment, our first donation of $10,000, and I said to them, there are no CUPE members today here in Sudbury. We are all steel workers. We stand with steel workers to stand up for pensions for all Inco workers. We can't win this fight on our own. Privatization, sisters and brothers, public services built by our parents' generation are a great equalizer in Canadian society. They're the wealth that workers own. The hospital down the street, the library, the public hockey arena, the public park, the public school. There has been and there will continue to be relentless pressure to privatize here in Canada and around the globe. Why? Because of the enormous profit potential in public services. And the latest form of contracting out and privatization, so-called public-private partnerships, handing over the financing, the ownership, and the operation of hospitals, of schools, to the private sector. If there's any upside in this recession, which has been terrible, it's exposed the myth of P3s. Here in this city, in the midst of a municipal election, 2 weeks ago, the mayor of Montreal, a proponent of P3s, fraught with scandal and cost overruns, announced the ending of the largest water P3 in Canadian history. $650 million. He didn't want to do it. He had to do it because it was a terrible deal. And water in Montreal remains under public control with public employees. In British Columbia, a government that's P3 crazy stepping in and stopping a P3 project in the Lower Mainland, a bridge that has spiraled out of control. We have never had an issue with the private sector building bridges and building hospitals and doing that for a profit so their workers can be paid a fair wage. But we have a big problem if that hospital or that school is going to be owned and operated and financed inefficiently by the private sector. In Ontario, our healthcare workers and the Ontario Health Coalition spent thousands of dollars and hundreds of demonstrations to expose the Brampton Hospital. They kept the information from us. We sued them and went to court and got the information. They sent the information to us in boxes, over 2,500 sheets of paper that we had to hire accountants to decipher. What was the story of Brampton Hospital? Hundreds of millions of dollars that needn't have been spent going into the hands of a private corporation, less operating rooms, less beds, a complete and utter boondoggle that the Auditor General in Ontario says is a mistake that never should have happened. The global recession has been terrible for workers, but it's driven home the point that privatization is not the answer. For 46 years, this union has fought privatization, and we need to recommit this week anywhere and everywhere in Canada where they seek to privatize. We will be in their face to stop the privatization of the public service. So how do we get there? How do we get there to defend free collective bargaining, to expand pension coverage, and to fight privatization in all of its forms? Well, one way we get there is through sound stewardship of our union, through our treating with respect your hard-earned dues dollars and your per capita. And I urge you to listen very carefully this afternoon to Brother Claude's report. We need the resources of the members of QP. We need to treat them with respect if we're going to win these battles. As public employees, we have endured past recessions. We have faced legislative attacks throughout our history. And those that led our union previously not only weathered these storms, they emerged stronger from past recessions. We too can meet the challenges that we face, and we can become a stronger union in meeting those challenges. And how do we do this? Well, one way we do it is by working together. I've been a member of our union since 1975, my entire working life. I've had the great privilege of many offices within our great union. I've been a president of my local. I've been president of a great labor council in my home city. I've been an officer of the Federation of Labor for 2 decades in Manitoba. An executive officer of the Canadian Labor Congress. A member of CUPE's National Executive Board. And for the past 6 years, the highest office in our union, national president. They're unbelievable, unbelievable jobs and an unbelievable honor. But they're not the most important job I had in CUPE. The most important job I had in our union was my first job, one I still hold as a shop steward in our union. You, everyone in this hall, hold some office or another. You're all stewards of the largest union in Canada. You're the bedrock. You're the bedrock of our union. As stewards, you're closest to the members. We need and we have great staff in CUPE. We need and we have great resources, great research, great tools to do the job. But that means nothing without a link to the workplace, to you, and to all the leaders that are at work today that can't be here at our convention. So in the strategic directions paper we'll present to you, we're calling 2010 the year of the steward, to shine a light on the bedrock of our union, to reinvest in shop stewards, to build the capacity to defend our union in every workplace in Canada. And I want to thank you, each and every one of you. You don't get thanked enough. You hear more complaints than compliments day in and day out. CUPE is a very large and complex organization. If I had one piece of advice for each and every one of you, beyond offering my thanks, it would be to urge you to get engaged, to be active, and to help strengthen the unity and the solidarity within our ranks, and the unity and the solidarity with other trade unions and with our coalition partners in communities across Canada, to build pride within our union. And when you leave here this Friday, I know that next week you're at local union meetings, health and safety meetings, grievance meetings, labor management meetings, bargaining sessions. Be proud of our union. Look the employer in the eye and let them know that we are a strong and united union, because your solidarity, your unity is the ultimate strength of the Canadian Union of Public Employees. Sisters and brothers, we truly do stand on the shoulders of thousands of sisters and brothers who built us into what we are, Canada's biggest and best union over the last 46 years. Those who built our union would be proud of what we've become. Many have passed on. They would be proud of our size, our resources, our accomplishments. And they would tell us, each and every one of us, to keep up the fight, to be proud CUPE members. And in our time as leaders of this great union, they would urge us to invite new members, new young members into our union, to prepare them to be the next leaders of our union at the local, provincial, and national level. They would ask us to keep building CUPE on behalf of the members of CUPE. In my 6 years as national president of our union, I have traveled to every corner of Canada multiple times. What I have seen everywhere, every single trip I've taken to meet you, where you live, where you strike, where you work, I have seen committed activists, committed staff, sisters and brothers doing an unbelievable job. When we are united, our solidarity shines through, and we are an unstoppable force for good, for our members, and for all Canadians. So it's not the thunderous message. It's a message to each and every one of you that you are the heart and soul of this great trust that 600,000 people place in our hands. All we've got, notwithstanding all our resources and our size and our money, all we've got is you. your commitment to your co-workers, your commitment to CUPE, your commitment to a broader trade union movement. It's the only strength we have. Everything else comes second. You are the most important part of the Canadian Union of Public Employees. So I say to you in a moment to look at the screens, because you're going to see yourselves. And as I declare open for the transaction of business, this 24th Constitutional Convention of the Canadian Union of Public Employees, I say to those that want to attack what we stand for, you better be ready for the fight of your lives. And I say to you, thank you for your commitment to CUPE. We need a great convention this week, and we need to build CUPE on behalf of the sisters and brothers who brought us this far. Let's have a great, great convention here in Montreal.
This podcast was recorded at the 2009 CUPE National Convention.